next guest on Downtown has created two of the most iconic roles in television history, Hal and Malcolm in the Middle, and of course Walter White in Breaking Bad, earned a Tony Award for his performance as President Lyndon Johnson in All the Way. And he's the author of a wonderful new book entitled A Life in Parts. Bryan Cranston, welcome to Downtown.
Rich, thank you. Good to be with you today. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great, thanks. Now, I understand from the book that many years ago when you and your brother were touring the country on motorcycles, you had planned to make it to Maine, but a little deluge in the Blue Ridge Mountains kept you from getting here, so we hope this is the next best thing.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a beautiful state you've got there. It really is, and I'd love to come visit again. I was just there not too long ago. We stopped into Portland, and I think that was Portland and some other port that we went to. I can't remember the other title, but we were on a little cruise up and around that area a year ago this month.
Oh, nice.
And
nice.
It's gorgeous.
Well,
you've got a nice place there.
Thank you. Big thanks to our friend John O'Hurley, a longtime friend of yours, for making this possible. I'm trying to visualize that dinner conversation when John said, by the way, there are these idiots in Maine who won't leave me alone. Can you do their show and get them off my back?
You know, that's exactly what he said. I think he added the adjective stupid idiots. I think there's these stupid idiots in Maine. He was. I've known him for ages. We had the distinction of being married to the same woman at the same time.
On Loving.
On Loving, yes. that's the kind of storylines you get on daytime drama. This was 33 years ago, a show called Loving on ABC. And, he was the bad guy. I was the innocent, naive guy and being played for the fool. And, yeah, it was fun. It was fun to play, and that's where I met John that long ago.
Well, you know, we talked with John about this. We've talked to people like Mike Farrell about their work in daytime dramas and what great training it was. What did your work on Loving do for you and help you develop as an actor?
You know, for me, it was everything. Not so much the work of doing a soap opera, because it's a tremendous intensity. The content level is overwhelming. So the quality is not as high, because they have to pump out these scripts every single day. And the genre itself is a dying breed. But for me at the time, I was 25 years old, and I had started professionally 2 years earlier. And this was the threshold for me. Once I got that job, it felt like I belong. It felt like I could do this. I can actually now legitimately call myself an actor, because that's what I'm doing for a living. And from that point on, that's all I've had to do. So I'm deeply grateful for that experience.
Every story you share in the book seems to be about challenges and how they helped you grow, not just as an actor, but as a man. Now, was that a construct of the book, or does that tell us a lot about how you approach life?
Well, it is how we approach life, isn't it? I mean, everybody has a crucible of some sort sprinkled through their lives that you are up against, and you have to figure out what your character is. Character, for me, to a person is developed or revealed, rather, when we are challenged, when we are up against, you know, we're under pressurized situations. Do we make the right decisions? And I guess you could say that Walter White on Breaking Bad made the bad decision. He was under tremendous pressure. He decided to become someone he wasn't, to cook crystal meth for his own financial gain, a very selfish act. And yet you are also, you kind of understand why he was doing this, you know. Could be altruistic reasons for his family at the time. And then it all just turned so dark and so awful for him and everyone he came in touch with. But as a human being, you know, we're all always faced with obstacles. And from a storyteller's point of view, I wanted to be able to present that in my book. And let people know, well, these are the hurdles I faced. Some I handled well, and some I didn't. Some I'm embarrassed about, or here's times when I was feeling insecure or filled with doubt. And how did I overcome that? How, you know, some things I'm still battling with. And I think it just, it was a a determination of mine to be honest and to be real and show fans of mine and people interested that this is who I am, warts and all, and take me, you know, or reject me as you see fit, but this is my story.
We're talking with Bryan Cranston on Downtown. Your parents were both actors. Your dad never achieved the stardom that he felt he deserved and eventually walked away from the family. And then you found out when you were on Who Do You Think You Are that was a pattern in your family. How did you decide to not only break that pattern but decide that having a solid family would be the foundation of your success and not an obstacle to it?
I don't know. Rich, to be honest with you, it's like I just... You know, my father deserted the family when I was 11 years old, and I didn't see him again until I was 22. My mother was devastated. He was the love of her life, and she was not, you know, in retrospect, she was not mature enough to handle that and realize her three kids need her attention, and she started drinking and then heavily and became an alcoholic. So emotionally, she was out of the picture, and I never saw my dad, and so I kind of had to grow up quicker than you should. I wasn't mature. I made decisions that were not in my best interest long term, and then you have to pay for those things. And I don't know. I guess it's the fact when you look at it that your parents or whomever you were raised with are always teaching you. Hopefully, you're in an environment where they're teaching you how to behave, how to be a good adult when you reach that age. But in my case, it was probably the opposite. And I looked at my parents and how they self-destructed, and I realized, oh, they're teaching me how not to behave. So I want to do the opposite of what they did. I want to live in moderation. I want to have a solid foundation. I've been married now for going on 28 years. We have a lovely daughter. We've been together for 30, and that's my rock. And by having that solid foundation, then I feel I can go crazy in my work because I'm always tethered to this foundation that gives me a sense of acceptance, a sense of love and purpose, and so that's it. And you're right, on that show, Who Do You Think You Are, when they trace the genealogy of your background, your family, there was a pattern of the men on my father's side of deserting their families. And it was, you know, even though I never met these men, I met my grandfather, but briefly, and he deserted his wife and child. And my father deserted his family. And I'm like, And my great-great-grandfather did the same thing. And it's like, oh, I can't. It was depressing to me. But I didn't accept that it was in my DNA. I just rejected that idea. And personally, I could never imagine turning my back on my love of my wife and daughter or my responsibility to them. It's so I just said at the very end, well, that pattern stops with me.
I thought one of the most poignant parts of the book was after your father died and you and your brother went into the house and you found a little piece of paper in his handwriting. Can you talk about what that said?
I think he knew he was dying. He was 90 years old, and that was 2 years ago. And he scribbled out in his shaky handwriting the best thing in my life is when my children forgave me for the worst time in my life. Wow. And it was sweet. And I think he wrote that out for us to find it. And I'll never forget that. And it was a lesson for me. As much as that dispiriting, awful relationship, and you know, we patch things up as best we could as we got older, but it was never going to be what anyone hopes for in a relationship with a father-son. But I came to an understanding that he did the best he could, and that's as much as we can ask anyone. And so, to an extent, you know, I did forgive him, but it still takes its toll. There are abandonment issues that I've dealt with, and resentment and some anger issues that, like, you know, I fortunately I found a career that allows me, encourages me to channel those negative feelings into characters that I can purge through my work, and that helps me a great deal. And running, I run, and you know, get the toxins out and sweat it out, and sometimes I'll get really angry when I'm running, and it's like, wow, where did that come from? And it's, you know, it's residue, and I just want to keep flowing and try to cleanse myself of all that kind of ill feelings, and it's working. It's a process.
You showed your comedy chops on Seinfeld as Dr. Tim Whatley, but Malcolm in the Middle really let those bloom. And I understand from the book that the character of Hal was not really very fleshed out when you first read for it.
Yeah, there was about 5 lines that I had in the first episode, and I didn't know what to do. So I in order to get that role, I was stumbling. I didn't know how to create a character out of only 5 lines. And he seemed indifferent, and he seemed disinterested in his family. And I realized, no, I can't play that. No one wants to see someone who's disinterested in his family. But I do believe people would relate to a person who was distracted by the insanity of his family, who would go on little mental vacations and then get caught, and he'd have to go, I'm sorry, what happened? Where are we? You know, And so I found that humorous and honest. And I basically wrote down all the qualities that the character of my wife, Lois, had. All, you know, strong-willed, fearless, tough, you know, brutally honest, you know, and all those things. And I wrote down the opposite characteristics: sensitive, sweet, romantic, fearful, and all those things. And I realized then, oh, I'm developing a character. And so I based my character on that little exercise, and it seemed to work.
Timing is everything in life and in acting as well. The cancellation of Malcolm made you available to work again with Vince Gilligan, who you'd worked with on a great episode of The X-Files. His idea, the notion of watching a character transform, as he put it, from Mr. Chips to Scarface, had to be exciting, but was there anything scary or intimidating about taking that journey?
No, not at all. I don't mind. You know, I think an actor needs to be honest and say, here I am. These are feelings that I felt. And I described that in the book. There was an experience with an ex-girlfriend that was, she was on drugs, and I didn't know it, and I couldn't control that situation. She was much more powerful than I was, and I succumbed to her will, and she scared me. And I talk about my inability to confront that, and my fear and insecurities in that relationship, and how it came to a blistering end, a frightening end. And you know, I was able then, from that past experience, to say, well, I know what it's like to feel like I could kill someone. I know what it's like to have that darkness. The best place for me to put it is in my work. And here's Walter White. You know, here's how he could turn. And here's the goodness in him, too. So it was the perfect role for any actor, because I was able to show all of me, good and bad, in the same character over the course of 6 years. And it was a turning point in my career, for sure. And I don't think I would have been able to get a publisher interested in writing my book had it not been for that character.
After Breaking Bad, you moved on to the stage, and I had the pleasure of seeing you down at ART in Cambridge as Lyndon Johnson in All the Way. And I direct high school kids, and I'm always talking about the physicality and how important that is in acting. And you on stage moving like the Lyndon Johnson that I remember as a kid. It was that physicality that made Bryan Cranston disappear and LBJ appear on the stage for us. But I understand that that took a physical toll on you as well.
It did. I was, you know, the way he held himself, he didn't have the best posture. He you know, abused his body by not sleeping well, by eating terribly and drinking habits. And so he slouched and he, you know, and so I'm trying to get into that character and it came, but it created some bad habits. And I'm finding myself slouching when I'm not working. And it's like, oh boy, giving me some backaches and stuff. But those are the, you know, the physical challenges that you have as an actor, and there's plenty of emotional challenges and risk that you go through. And, you know, that was a great character and a great play by Robert Chankin, and I was lucky to be the one to do it. And then we not only did it at the ARG, but also on Broadway, and then we did the HBO version of it now called All the Way, and it's still available. You can see it on HBO Go. And I guess every once in a while on HBO too. So I was very proud of that work, and what a character. Lyndon Johnson was, as Bill Moyers famously said, he said, 11 of the most interesting people I have ever met is Lyndon Johnson.
Bryan Cranston, the author of a wonderful new book, A Life in Parts. Before we let you go, on that trip when you hit the rains for about 5 days in the Blue Ridge Mountains, you decided to commit to acting and to a job that you loved. And you write in the book, acting is how we understand who we are. How has acting helped you understand Bryan Cranston?
Because it's exploratory. It requires the person to self-examine his or her life and be able to open up the cavity of your emotions and use everything and every be part of who you are in order to be successful. You can't be afraid to pull out the darker parts of your characteristics or the idiosyncrasies that you have. You have to be able and willing to be vulnerable and open and susceptible to criticism, and here it is, here I am, you know, take me if you will, and if not, that's got to be okay with me too, and that's risky, and so innately, actors need to be willing to take those risks, both physically, emotionally, intellectually, and it's a journey that is empowering if you're able to do it. The ability to convey a message and have an audience emotionally respond to something you're saying is a very powerful tool. And it's what empowers me and why I love being a storyteller. And that's what I tried to bring to the book.